Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics, such as...
Elle and Max on Stranger Things. Literally, couldn't, stop spending time together. They did the whole, staying in the restroom for 500 years thing. Confused the fuck out of people. Even wore rainbow at some point. I don't know if you noticed that.
Oh my god, they wore rainbow?
Max did. Yay. Yeah.
Fucking, I love Max. Her hair is amazing. I stan a little legend.
I was getting wild gay vibes from all the kids this season and got really thrown off later on, but not just Elle and Max, right?
Oh, fuck no. So let's talk about Will. There was one episode right at the end, I think, where Mike was like, "It's not my fault you don't like girls." And I was like, "Damn, word? We gonna do him like this? He already got a chili bowl haircut. We ain't gotta do him like this."
They're wild in the season. What up, Corona?
What's poppin', Chingona? Was goody? Was good?
So, the new... So much has happened, when the new trailer for Mulan is out, and...
I don't hate it.
I kind of am sad that we're not gonna get the whole, dramatically cutting your hair off with a sword scene.
Oh, with the synth music playing in the background? That was crazy.
That sucks, but I'm pretty stoked on it. I want to see somebody, that's really fucking good at what they do what they do.
I think what has been, turning me off about most remakes is that they just do the exact same shit again, right? And it's not original. And I thought I was going to be mad because Mulan, we've spoken about our deep love for Mulan. And, you know, it actually seems a little bit better. There's going to be, action scenes. There's trying to stick to the original actual story of Mulan. Yeah. So I'm really into that. She's a badass fighter on top of being a warrior. So there's a lot of things I'm actually okay with. But I am sad we're losing bisexual Shang.
I'm kind of stoked that, unlike the cartoon where she's kind of, she's not that good at at fighting and shit, she gets lucky basically and has the help of a lot of creatures and such, but in this case she's actually just good at shit, and I don't know, I'm always here for that shit.
I'm gonna take that as a win, that she's just good at shit this time, and also that the racism in Disney movies, how only black people are only, or black people or brown people are only allowed to be creatures and Cusco, llamas,
shout out
little
Lion
dragons.
King.
Shout out Lion King with a whole movie of, everyone is black in it, and they just let them be fucking cartoon animals,
animated.
Fuck Disney forever. Fuck Disney forever. at least Mushu is not going to be a caricature of a black man or a black woman. I prefer that.
At least we're getting Ariel now.
At least we get a black Ariel, and it's pissing off literally all the fucking unseasoned folks out there. I'm just so happy.
Racists were so quick to out themselves. Everyone is focusing on all these people that are bashing it, and they're just outing themselves as douchebags, and that's all fine and dandy to me because I know who not to fuck with.
But not just that, the girl can actually motherfucking sing. Let's hire people that can actually do the job, right? She can sing. She's a singer. Her albums are actually, their debut album was super fucking lit. Shout out to Beyonce, again.
Yeah.
Our Lord and Savior.
For sure. Yeah, all I can think about is her sister being what the fuck, what about me?
Damn.
But anyways, I think she's going to be great for the part. I think she's going to be wonderful.
Oh, I can't wait for her to just be on everything, and then that's super iconic to grow up having.
Yeah,
because you remember the remake of Cinderella where there's Whoopi Goldberg was the mom, a white dude was the dad, Asian son. Yeah. That was lit. I support
Moesha,
that one.
It was fucking badass. My favorite.
Yes, with Moesha.
Favorite Disney movie.
The only remake that we stand that, because I mean honestly, it's a fucking fantasy, make everybody be anything. It was lit. I loved it.
That one was really fucking good. Oh, and other kind of late news, because we had a week off for Patreon, Lil Nas X came out. Fucking dope as fuck.
Oh yeah, it's old news now, guys, but it's important to us.
But we should mention it because we haven't yet. We're super stoked on that shit. He extended Pride for the rest of the year.
Just Queer so Man know. had a fucking. He still has like a top song.
Yeah,
like the number one song.
Still not letting anybody get through.
United States. I love it. Like the toddler stan and Queer Man. It's lit out here.
Yeah. And so. One Day at a Time got renewed.
Oh my god, bitch.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about our reactions. We talked about it before, but not to the
not
general
for you
public.
Guys, just to the Patreon.
Not for
people.
Y'all. How do you feel, Maite? How do you feel?
So I was stoked on it. I talked about some of my concerns just because they are moving to Pop TV, which is a cable network, and they have to write for ad breaks, and all their writers aren't coming back, and they're behind schedule in writing and production. But it seems like they got all the actors back, and of course Gloria is still there, so I think everything will be just fine. And I'm actually excited to see how they shake things up. But yeah, there will be some changes.
It's gonna come back to like Pop TV. It's a cable channel, and I got it lit. I found out I have that channel. Shout out to an ally, Denzel. Love you. I have the channel because of you. But yeah, Pop TV, guys, is coming back in 2020.
Yeah, I actually started watching Schitt's Creek. It's on Netflix, but it's from Pop TV as well. And I started watching that just to like, you know, just support, I guess. It's pretty funny, and it has a pansexual guy on there, so it's kind of funny. I watch it.
Hey, is it so you like it?
Yeah.
Would you ever review it?
It's
or
like
are
a
you
filler
still kind
show
of like...
for me. It's like if I'm just kind of want something on that I'm not gonna like 100% pay attention to, but I want something funny on, then I have that on.
Gotcha. It's background noise.
Yeah, but it's good background noise.
I know we're going to talk about it later, but you guys please continue to watch Los Spookies.
So good.
I don't know what you're doing.
More queer characters than I expected.
Yes.
I'm stoked on it.
You saw that too. And I was like, wait. Because I wasn't listening for
reason. Last episode, I got like a clue as to it. And then this latest episode, like it's confirmed. I was like, yes.
Okay. Confirmed gay.
Casual.
Dude, and I didn't even listen to it. I was, like, doing something. I turned away, and I come back, and I was like, body language. Mm-hmm. What is that?
Yeah.
I rewind it, and I was like, I'm not just imagining this.
Show. I really, really love it.
It's so good, dude.
Okay.
Rep matters.
More news. Women's World Cup. The USA, as expected, won.
Bow, bow, bow.
And all of the women went and kissed their girlfriends afterwards. It was nice.
You know who I like stand the entire time, but I was sad to find out was straight, was Rose Lavelle.
That one I expected to be straight. She had wild footwork.
It was,
and I was like talking mad shit about how she had mad footwork, but never scored. And as soon as I said she scored.
Bruh, I've been standing Rose Lavelle since like the beginning of this World Cup just because I was like, that's a cold ass white girl.
Yeah.
Like, I would see how she would just play, and I'd be like, that's the coldest white girl on the field. I don't care if she's not scoring. She's getting the ball places. And then my baby made a goal, and
it was nice.
I felt validated.
I was standing pressed the whole time, and I thought she was straight, and I think she's queer, so that blew my mind, personally.
Oh, yeah. That's not straight.
I was like, press. Get it. I was stuck
Most of
it.
The other team wasn't straight either. I fucking love it.
Fucking
everybody
Sweden.
Was gay.
An IKEA over here. All right.
IKEA. I loved it. It was all the rep that I needed. It made me really like happy and empowered. Like I was like, wow, I really need to see like queer women win something. Like it gave me hope.
It was fun. It was a really good game.
It was a badass game, and I was like drinking at 11 in the morning, so it was great.
Oh dude, you were drinking at 8 in the morning.
Oh shit, I forget.
Yeah.
I saw y'all's script talking about been drinking all day.
From 8 to 9 p.m. Like,
God
8 a.m.
Damn.
To 9 p.m. Cried at least 4 times.
Oh, your liver. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous of y'all's young livers.
Okay. Calm down. Our livers are suffering too. But
no, I don't drink like that no more. So, well, I did this weekend. But, anyways, girl.
Anyways,
dude, I met some listeners at Elva's party.
Nice.
Well, not listeners. I did. There are other listeners. And, of course, the homie was there. So it wasn't... I was surprised by how many queer people were there. And they were like, yeah, I've heard your podcast. And I was like, whoa. So that was pretty cool.
That's fun.
People listen to us in real life, might they?
Oh, that's weird. I thought we were just talking to each other.
And you know, into the deep, dark void.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Is that everything? Is that everything we got to talk about before we get into it?
Is everything that's been happening? Is that what's been happening out here? I think so. Other than, like, the whole world is crashing down as per usual.
Years and years. Yeah,
as usual. Years. Oh, I haven't caught up.
Oh, I'm really?
Bad gay.
No, it's fine.
I'm going to watch it.
Yeah. No, the world is dying. Fuck it. Moving on.
So are we, so.
Yeah.
So, what are we talking about today, Maite? I'm super hype on today's episode.
Yeah, today we're talking, we're going a little unorthodox. Not, like, wild unorthodox, but, like, a little against the grain.
Yes, we are. It's kind of super against the grain, actually, because it's centering... surprisingly men, but they're not straight, so it's complicated.
I'm centering women, but they are white women and they're straight women for the most part.
I'm standing like a socialist king from the 70s that like the more research I did, the more my mind was blown. I was like, whoa, this is ties to Stonewall, lit. This has ties to the like gay civil rights movement of 1969. It's wild out here. It's a badass movie. Yeah.
So let's get into yours. What you said is from 69?
No. It has ties to 1969. So today I will be talking about a fucking classic, a masterpiece. Ava DuVernay even fucking loves this movie. So, of course, you know, it's verified out here. Shout out to the ally that let me know this movie that existed and what it was really about. And surprisingly, the ally, of course, is my brother. He saw this movie a long time ago and was all about it. It's called Dog Day Afternoon, and it's from 1975. What's up? It's directed by Sidney Lumet. He also directed 12 Angry Men, Network, The Wiz. You know, he was out here.
Yeah.
you might have heard of The Wiz. You might have heard of 12 Angry Men. It's also starring, like, one of the biggest fucking movie stars ever. Al Pacino plays Sonny. This movie... Where do I start? Probably at the beginning with this movie. This movie is fucking wild. It's based on a real life story of John Wojcicki. I'm saying his name all fucked up. So sorry. I'm so sorry, my socialist king. It's based on John Wojcicki, white man, but he wasn't straight. Anyways, he robs a bank in Flatbush, Brooklyn in 1972. And get this, he robs the bank so that he can get his girlfriend a sex change operation in 1972. And I stand that because the whole movie is credit to the writers and the directors. It's not just about him fighting for the rights of, like, queer folk. He's also, like, fucking robbing a bank. He's fighting against a... institutionalized racism. We'll talk about it. He's fighting against, like, police brutality, prisoner rights. Like, there's so many things about this movie that make it just so fucking woke. And it's, I stand this movie so much. I don't even know where to start. It's just so much there. Okay.
The beginning.
So this movie's opens up and you're getting scenes of New York City back in the 70s. It's like dirty, it's fucking grimy, there's garbage everywhere, there's like people not in a home, like most of like the city's been burnt down just because like New York is just fucked up in the 70s. You see people doing drugs and shit, like just outside broad daylight, no fucks given. So you're really seeing a, like, and it was shot in 1975, based in 1972, so this feels like a fucking, like, photo of, like, everything that's happening in the 70s in New York. You open up and you see Al Pacino going into a bank with a fucking box of, like, what looks like flowers. And he goes and robs a fucking bank. And it's the sloppiest bank robbery you've ever fucking seen. He's so nice about it. He's just, like... He's, like, the kindest bank robber. Like, if I was going to get, like, robbed in a bank, I'd want him to be the one doing it, you know? Because he's so nice. But the whole movie, at first you're wondering, and for the way it's shot, you don't know why he's really robbing this bank, and that's like the point of it, is that you're just watching this going like, okay, well, he's robbing a bank, but I don't know what the fuck he's robbing a bank. And he starts holding people fucking hostage, and he's nice about it still. He gets on TV at one point, and he uses getting on TV as an opportunity to discuss like fucking workers' rights, to talk about like how the wage inequality between a bank teller and some guy on TV. Like, he's not just, he's pointing out like, bitch, I don't make no money. You make a shit ton of money, and that's reason enough for me to rob this bank. I fucking love him. Like, this crowd forms outside the bank. They start like shouting his name. They start chanting his name. He takes money from the bank and just starts throwing it into the crowd. Like, come on. I would be standing out there too, hoping for some fucking money to land my way. Like, it's lit. Like, give me some motherfucking money. Anyways, as the movie progresses, I talk about police brutality and racism because there's a point in the movie where the director's doing something really interesting. There's a black security officer. He's having like an asthma attack or something. He's like really about to like probably die. So Al Pacino's character, Sonny, is like, all right, well, he's going to be the first person we let out because he needs to get the fuck out of here. He's going to die and I don't need that. So as they let him out, the cops start pointing guns at him because they think he's part of one, like, of the crew robbing the bank. And like the people in the bank that are held hostage have to be like, bro, he is one of us. Please don't fucking kill him. And it's like, yo, that's to this day, yeah, like a real. But like in today, he would have died. They would have put 25 bullets in him easy. But since these are the 70s, it's a little bit different. People probably still cared. I think this movie, I mean, it's intentionally doing that, right? It's intentionally showing the racism. It's intentionally showing the sexism. It's intentionally showing prisoner rights. It's about prisoner rights, dude. Mm-hmm. At one point, Al Pacino starts yelling out Attica. And if we can talk about Attica for 1 minute.
Yeah.
Attica was about a prisoner's fucking riot in 19... I think it just literally happened the year before. Where are my notes? Give me 1 second. Attica happened September in 1971. There were 1,300 inmates. They took over an upstate New York prison. They only killed one guard on accident. I think he, like, died from injuries sustained during the riot. So he just, like, passed away. They were trying to come to terms with the governor of New York. And guess who the fucking governor of New York is in 1971? It's fucking Nelson Rockefeller.
Oh, shit.
This is the same year that fucking, I think, homeboy Richard Nixon is running for fucking president. He's going to win. Stonewall riots happened in 1969. MLK got assassinated in 1968. All of these things have been happening in the 60s. And this is 1971 New York, and it's about to end, right? With Attica. So they're trying to come to terms with the governor, fucking Rockefeller. He's trying to run for president. He wants to be president at some point. So what he does is he takes his 600 armed officers into this fucking prison and kills 29 inmates, and he kills 10 hostages too.
Jesus.
He just kills everybody. He fucking massacred everybody. They didn't even talk about how many people were wounded. And another thing that New York State did in Attica is they lied about it. They fucking, all of these documents, I think they're to this day still sealed. They're not public information. They're not telling you what happened or how it went down. We only know about the people that died. We know nothing about the people that got like maimed, injured by the police that he sent in to kill everybody. Because they were shooting indiscriminately. They just were shooting. They said, fuck right. This. We're massacring everybody in this fucking prison right now. And so they lied. They said that everyone that got hurt was the prisoners doing. They said the prisoners killed everybody. But the truth started leaking out. So a year later, this dude robs a bank. And he's like very aware of what's happening in Attica. He was very aware about prisoners' rights. And you're asking yourself, how is this woke-ass dude and why is this woke-ass dude robbing a bank? And then you find out he's gay. Then you find out he's queer. And I did my own research, and I found out he was also a proprietor of like Stonewall. He's a proprietor of a bunch of Greenwich Village gay bars. And I found out that he also might have had a connection to the Gambino family, which the Gambino family ran the Stonewall.
Yeah.
Mobs used to run like the queer bars back in the day because who nobody else would. So I thought that was really fucking interesting because the gay alliance, the gay rights alliance, he knew everybody there. People from the Village Voice knew exactly who he was because he was part of the community. So he, instead of getting like backlash from the community, once they found out why he was robbing the bank, they was all about it. They was for this man and his fucking journey to rob a fucking bank. The 70s were fucking wild, dude. Like, this guy probably was at Stonewall, you know? And now he's, like, robbing a bank to get his, like, girlfriend surgery. Gender reassignment surgery. Like, how lit is that?
Yeah. That Pacino did this, it's still really surprising to me, but badass.
I think Pacino wanted to do it. And in another fun thing is that, like, the actual robbery, the bank robbery happened in 1972. 3 years later, they're already making a movie about it. Like, and it's not just any dude. Like, it's this dude who's, like, a fucking amazing-ass, like, director. I mean, I would do anything to work with him. And Al Pacino, I'm pretty sure that's why he did it. He wanted to work with him. And I think it says a lot about the director taking this project on and doing such a good job talking about, like, queer rights in 1975. Like, that's not a real thing. I mean, when did gay marriage get legalized? And, I mean, the way he treated, like, POCs in this fucking movie. In the crowds of New York City, you actually see people that aren't just like fucking white. Like, even the people in the bank, there's like a Latina there. Everybody in the crowd outside is like, looks like New York in the 70s. It's not just white folk. But what they got right was most of the cops were white guys. That was interesting and lit.
Yeah.
He did serve 20 years in prison. He did sell rights to his life for like maybe 1%, maybe less of this movie. But you know what? You know what the best part of this whole fucking thing is? That the woman he did it for, she fucking sued Warner Brothers. And I think she sued a book company that tried to use her name. And she got millions out of it.
Nice.
And she got to have her operation, dude, off of this money that she scammed these white folks. Because they were, like, trying to use her name. Yeah. They were trying to slander her. She sued the fuck out of them. Got her, like, $2 million, maybe more. Got her surgery. And when they asked her at the movie premiere, hey, girl, did you love him? She's like, girl, I never did. He robbed a bank, and she never loved that motherfucker, and she said it openly. I was like, word to you. Her name, the legend is called Liz Eden, and I stan a woman that scanned, like, imagine, you got a dude to rob a bank for you, and then at the end of it, you're like, fuck you, man, I didn't even love you, thank you, appreciate it, got my $2 million. But had he never done that, she would have never got her $2 million.
Yeah.
She probably could have never afforded her operation, and she didn't feel bad at it at all. Like, she didn't feel bad at all. No guilt. Scamming, yeah. White men. I'm so proud of her. Legend.
The legend scammer. Did you ever get around to watching that episode of Tales of the City?
I did not yet, because I haven't been watching anything.
No, it's fine. But it's just, it reminds me of that story a lot, because it's kind of similar where...
We scamming white men? Cis white men?
Yes and no. But basically, There's this trans woman who... So spoiler alert for some of you who haven't finished Tales of the City, but there's an episode where they go back in time and, you know, there's a passing trans woman, and that's really important in this because back in the day it was like a whole different story, and she meets this guy and they fall in love like instantly, but he turns out to be a fucking cop. And
like actually a cop.
Yeah.
Oh god.
So long story short, he's been saving up all this money, and he knows about, you know, that she's trans, and when he finds out, he's like, whatever, like, we'll figure it out, like, we'll get you surgery, whatever. And he gets all this money, but she doesn't understand why he's getting so much money until, like, some of her trans friends who are women of color like kind of tell him, like, yeah, cops come and they raid, you know, all these establishments that queer and trans people hang out in, and they like basically threaten them and they take money from them. So this dude was like spoiling her and had all this money for her to get her surgery, but she didn't realize until later that that money was coming from her community. So he was scamming them and then giving it to her. So he ends up giving her a fuck ton of money. And
oh.
Yeah. And she basically builds this whole life off of that money. And then shit kind of goes sideways. But that's the long story short of it.
Repent, sinner, repent.
Yeah, exactly. It's God. Pretty fucked.
That's so fucked. I mean, but that's like the truth of like, I mean, he was scamming her community, whereas this woman.
Well, they didn't stay together. I didn't mention that, but they didn't end up staying together. He just he gave her the money and was like, "I can't be with you," because she was outed as a trans woman.
Oh fuck.
Yeah.
See, Sunny in this shit didn't give a fuck. Who knew?
Yeah.
They brought her up there. She was not in her, you know, outfit. She just came as she was, and he was like, "I don't give a fuck." Put her on the phone. That's my wife. Oh, another thing, they got married in a church.
Oh wow!
This John married Liz Eden in a fucking
church.
Wasn't
he very like adamantly Catholic?
He was very Catholic, and he didn't give a fuck. And I mean, that's cool though. I think that's pretty gnarly when like he was just so post 1975. Like he's very like 2019. He's like, "I don't give a fuck. I'm gonna rob a bank, okay? Fuck your capitalism, all right?" He said, "I fuck." And even the people in the bank didn't give a fuck. They're like, "Cool, you're robbing the bank. Look, they pay me by the hour, motherfucker. I could care less. Take this money, do what you want. Don't kill me, because it ain't worth it." Like there was nothing patriotic about this movie. It was very like, fuck the banks, fuck the cops. Like they didn't even want to get saved by the cops. The cops were like, "Hey, we'll get you out of here," and she like everybody in there was like, "Fuck you, man."
I like that you said that, that they didn't want to get saved by the cops, because a lot of the things that you're mentioning tie into what I'm going to be talking about today.
Ooh, lit. Really, fuck the cops, fuck the popo. Yeah. And dude, everybody in this fucking movie was about that. They fucking hate cops. Like, and I'm like, look, that energy, I need it in Texas, because these motherfuckers worship them like they fucking pay your bills. Like they fucking take care of your babies at night. They do not, sir. They come arrest your babies and they charge you more fucking money. Anyways, I'm sorry, I hate cops. Anyways,
same.
You all guys watch all of them. I don't give a fuck. You related to me.
No exceptions.
Fucking, you're not related to me no more. Don't pull me over. Actually, I take that back. Look, if any of my family members want to become a cop, don't pull me over. You bitch can't pay that bill. Anyways, I know I didn't talk a lot about the movie itself, because it's kind of like, essentially, it's just hilarious. It's good. It's good for your soul. It's good to watch America at some point in American history, where I think that was the very last chance of a real revolution. It was back before people could get like access to phones and Wi-Fi. Because, dude, let me tell you, another thing that's really interesting about this movie is that it's like a case study of like people going viral in the 70s. Like a lot of the people, what they're doing and a lot of the things the cops aren't doing, the reason why the cops aren't massacring this bank is because they're on camera. The reason why maybe all the people are like really hype and all for this is because they're on camera too. At one point, like, a guy is delivering pizza, is on camera for, like, 5 seconds on New York News or whatever, and he's like, "I'm a fucking superstar." And I was just like, yo, that's the equivalent of going viral now.
Yeah, it's just performative.
So it's all performative, and that was, like, another layer. And I was like, yo, the 70s, like, that was right when, like, TV was becoming a normal thing, an accessible thing. And I was just like, oh shit, like this is America before like Wi-Fi. This is America going viral. And I just, it's so interesting, and I give it fucking 5 panluces. Sidney Lumet, you fucking amazing director. I stan you. I don't usually stan white men, but you fucking really was out here saying it all. And
they also write it?
No, let me give you the writers' names. Unless my fake ass didn't write them down, and I'm gonna be really mad at myself. It was actually even based on a story written, I think, in the Village Voice. I'm not sure about that. Don't quote me.
So, written by Frank Pearson, P.F. Cluj? Or a magazine article that they wrote, I guess?
Yes, it was a magazine article that they wrote. And it was based on that.
From Leslie Waller. So, screenplay was from Frank Pearson.
Yes, screenplay by Frank Pearson.
Interesting.
they're fucking smart. They deserve, I hope they got shit. I don't know. I hope they got careers after that. It was such a fucking well-written, well-directed, well-acted movie. And I stan Al Pacino being a queer man and totally standing in that shit. Loved it. So shout out to this movie. Again, 5, 5, 6 panduses. I really love it. It's good. Everyone should watch it. Watch it with your mama. And ain't nobody going to be fucking in it. It's just not with that kind of movie. It's really, it's lit. Just watch it with your mama.
Word. So what's your rating?
5 to 6 panduses, bro. See? Like, it's fucking love this movie. I make Gloria watch it. I'm making everybody watch it. Shout out to my brother from telling me what it was really about. And he was so casual. He's like, yeah, you didn't know it was about that? I was like, ally.
Word.
But anyways, I'm excited to hear about what you're going to talk about. Let's tell the people. I'm excited.
For sure. So I'm going to be talking about Thelma and Louise today. I've talked about it before, like, briefly, because I admire this movie for a lot of reasons. It's directed by Ridley Scott, who, you know, he's known for, like, Blade Runner and a bunch of other stuff, because that man has never been out of a job. I mean, he's a white man. What are you going to do?
But he's not mediocre. He's not mediocre.
No. I mean, you can just tell by the way that this movie looks visually that there was somebody with expertise doing this. But it was written by Callie Khoury, who was raised in Texas and Kentucky. So totally suited for the job. Funnily, crazily, to me, like, Thelma and Louise was her first major piece of work. Like, It was really well, really goddamn well written. And she snagged a director like Ridley Scott on her first ever movie. Like, that blows my fucking mind. Since then, she's written a couple of other movies. Something to Talk About, Divine Secrets of the Yaya. And then she moved into TV and she created Nashville and she show ran it from 2012 to 2018. And now she has a couple more movies in pre-production, so I'm kind of excited to see what she has up her sleeve there. But
I didn't know Ridley Scott directed it. That's crazy.
Yeah.
What?
Reason that I bring that up is it's kind of, to me, it's fucked up that, like, Callie hasn't gotten half the credits, half the work that Ridley has, like, not even fucking close. Even though that was her first movie, and it was wildly fucking successful. And she won the Academy Award for Best Screenplay. Whereas Ridley Scott, who had done a bunch of other shit, he just got a nomination for Best Director that year. And it got a total of 6 nominations that year for her first fucking movie. So, I don't know.
First movie?
Yeah.
Ever?
Ever.
What the fuck?
So
success!
Yeah. But she didn't get as much work. Like, not even a fraction of what he did, you know? So, but I guess it's honestly not a surprise. Because people, when I say people, I mean men, were really pissed off about this movie when it first came out. It had heavy criticism. Like, it was hated when it first came out. And now it's beloved. And I'll tell you guys why. So it stars Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon, who are Thelma and Louise, respectively. Basically, it's about, like, two women who are very different, but they're best friends, and it's all about them navigating through, like, the fucked up patriarchal world. And just keep in mind, it came out in, like, 1991, but a lot of this bullshit, like, it still translates to today. Like, people are still going through this shit. It's, like, shit's barely changed. Which is pretty wild. So, and then also because it came out 27 years ago, this isn't going to be spoiler free. I'm going to get into it. Just like Fred Pepita got into the other movie.
Yeah, it's 1991. Old as fuck, yeah.
Before I was born. Right. So, either way, I've seen the movie like multiple times. I've read the screenplay. I've written about it. Like, it's such an impressive like movie that you can appreciate it no matter how much you know about it. So even if you haven't seen it, I think maybe, like, depending on how you like to consume media, you might even enjoy it more after knowing the shit about it, you know? So, and if you don't want to hear it, then skip this and go to Amazon Prime and you can stream it for free. So, you first see Thelma and Louise basically in their respective places within the patriarchy. Louise is a waitress at a diner, and Thelma is the housewife to, like, the shittiest shit ever shat in the world. His name is Daryl, and he's Daryl. he's like the first version of like the patriarchy personified that they show in this movie. And he's like your typical super controlling husband that expects his wife to do everything he says and not to question his own suspicious behavior because he's obviously a trash bag. So he goes off to work, and Thelma and Louise decide to go away for the weekend. And Thelma doesn't tell him because he would just throw a fit. So that's like just the very first thing that you see Thelma do that is like a defiant decision, because she's supposed to be like this very docile housewife and stuff. Her the next one that she makes is that when they're finally on the road, which doesn't take too long, she wants to make a pit stop at a bar, and this is like in the countryside, you know. So there we meet Harlan. He's the next douchebag. He's like all smiles and charming, and he buys Thelma these drinks, spins her around on the dance floor, and then she gets all dizzy. And literally this is all like calculated, like it goes really smoothly for him. It's like he's done this like 100 times, and he probably has. And he tells her, oh, you need to get some fresh air, and he takes her outside where conveniently no one is at. And like honestly, this was like super familiar, right? Like this hasn't changed with men over the years. It's just evolved to like other types of substances maybe in other locations. Like these kind of men, they're not looking for consent, they're just looking for an opportunity. So he like really deliberately and like gruesomely attempts to, like, trigger warning by the way, to rape her, and he is interrupted by Louise and her gun.
That's right.
Yeah, so, and which really is actually Thelma's gun, but Louise has it. And so literally this guy is so fucking shitty that he, even after Louise stops him because she has a gun pointed at his bitch ass, and she's telling him, like, you know, she's crying and like she's screaming, like that's the sound of a woman that isn't giving consent, and she's literally spelling it out for him, and he's not like taking it, he's not like sitting there understanding, he's literally like, oh, I should have done it anyways, and he's talking shit to a woman with a gun, and that gets him shot and he dies. So
that's lit.
So that's, you know, one of the first great things about Thelma and Louise.
Iconic.
Yeah,
fucking iconic. I love this movie already. Continue. Yes.
So
5 stars already. Yes. 5 stars.
No cafecitos. So Louise's first instinct is to flee the scene, and Thelma, you know, is just following her, but she's questioning it, like, why aren't we stopping and telling the police and pleading, you know, self-defense? But Louise is like quick. She's like, no, like, first of all, you and Harlan were happily dancing all night long, and there's a fuck ton of witnesses that will be able to tell the cops that. Two, there's not sufficient physical evidence to support like what they're saying. And Louise was the only witness to that attempt, so that's not going to be trustworthy enough. Three, Thelma was the only witness that can say that Thelma shot him in self-defense, which is kind of a partial lie because they had gotten away, but he was talking shit, so he got shot. So
that's what he gets.
Yeah, so they flee. They leave, obviously. Like, what else are they going to fucking do? And as you, I mean, I don't know, you can tell really quickly that Louise is, like, very well-versed in this. She knows what's going to happen. She knows that she can't just, you know, go to the police. And you kind of start to get an idea that, like, she's hiding something.
This is her fifth murder, isn't it?
No, not exactly.
Oh,
but okay. Because she's well-versed on how rape charges work. And she, they're going to run away, they're in the South. So she's like, we're going to Mexico. Like, that's where we got to go. But she refuses to go through Texas. And when you're in Oklahoma, the only thing between you and Mexico is Texas. So, like,
10 hours of Texas.
Yeah. So going around it is not, like, a smart thing to do, basically. But she's adamant. She's like, you're going around Texas. We're not going to Texas. Not the panhandle. Not anywhere fucking on it. Like, wherever. So that's where you're kind of getting a clue as to, like, you know, she's hiding some
shit. Why can't she go to Texas?
Yeah, why won't she go to Texas? And why does she know so much shit about some shit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even, like, she mentions Texas earlier in the bar scene when they barely walk into the bar, and she's like, oh, this bar reminds me of, like, something that you would find in Texas. And I was like, So, like I said, they flee. And then Thelma meets JD, who is played by Brad Pitt, which is his first major role, actually. And his character, JD, is one of the big reasons that men had a lot of issues with Thelma and Louise, the movie. Because it was one of the first times that the male gaze as a trope had been flipped on its head, and it became the female gaze. And JD was a subject of that. You know, like, Thelma had spent all this time as a docile housewife, and she was turning into, like, a take-charge bad bitch. And then JD as a character was literally used as a tool, pun intended, to further her storyline, which is something that they did to women for, you know, they still do that
still,
to women.
Still do.
Yeah, so this flipped it on its head, and men were like, why are we being forced to watch her lust after Brad Pitt? Like, the fuck?
Just because it's hot girl summer, that's why. Hot girl
Megan
summer.
Megan Stallion said it. So, and then on Louise's side, kind of concurrently with this, she's dealing with her on-again, off-again suitor, who's a musician, like, freaking... What was that fucking dude's name?
Is that the James Dean?
James Dean. I'm fucking stupid.
Oh, he's queer. So, but anyways.
He's like a James Dean type who wasn't really around. He's not the commitment type. But after realizing that he could lose Louise, because she calls him asking him to send her all her life savings, he panics and he flies to Oklahoma City and he proposes to her. And she sees right through that shit. She's like, he throws this like temper tantrum that, like, you know, like, proves once again that even though he's doing all these things for her, like, men ain't shit still. And she's like, you know, you're just saying this shit because you think you're gonna lose me, and you're not, because you want to. So she just uses him for a fun night and goes on her way, sends him away, doesn't say
support
yes
that.
So yeah,
that.
To me it was like really important that they showed this, because like he's playing into a fantasy that like some mediocre man is gonna come and save the poor woman, but she doesn't let him, you know. So I don't know, I think that it was just one of the other ways that they like low-key every step of the way defied the patriarchy to me. And then JD robs them of all their money and then bounces the fuck out. Men are trash. So like, it
should have killed him too, shit.
Yeah. So, but it, I mean, honestly, it doesn't matter at this point, because like Thelma has been so empowered. Like I said, JD was literally used as a tool to like teach her a lot of things, including how to rob, which is funny, like how to rob people. So, because he like admits it to her, he's like, I'm a robber, like, and this is how I do it. And he does it in a really polite way where he's like, no one needs to get hurt, I'm just taking this money and I'm getting out of here. And she, like, he shows her how to do it. And so she, after he robs her, she goes and, like, robs, like, a store or something to get them some money so they can get out of there. And, like, this is Thelma, like, literally taking things into her hand because she takes the wheel. Because Louise is, like, at a loss for words. Like, she's just turned away this guy and lost all her money and she killed a man. So she's...
That's, yeah.
Yeah. She's struggling.
A lot to go through in like 24-48 hours.
Yeah, but Thelma, like, you know, like after Louise, if you've noticed at this point, Louise saves her for the weekend, and then she saves her from Harlan, this douchebag, and now Thelma is saving her. You know, she's taking over, and they're saving each other, one, like, one after the other.
Bitch, that's beautiful. I'm really feeling things. I'm not like being dramatic.
You're not just being dramatic this time. Cool.
No, like, I feel that. Wow. Okay, I'm sorry.
So that's after really they do that, they get pulled over by this cop. And so this is another man who's just there to take them for granted. And he doesn't treat them as dangerous. He doesn't take them seriously. So for once, this is helpful, because Thelma is really easily to get, like, he's really easily able to get a gun on him. And they get out of the situation so quick. Cause this motherfucker's just like, sit down, little lady, you know, like acting like they're not gonna do anything to him. And they literally, like, Thelma, like, points a gun at him, makes him get out of the car, then, like, shoots bullet holes into the trunk of the car, and then forces him to get in there. And she's like, oh, those are air holes so that he doesn't, like, suffocate. And then later in the movie, one of my favorite scenes, which isn't really a necessary scene, like, if it wasn't in there, it wouldn't affect the movie at all, really, but it's also like strangely symbolic in like a fuck the police kind of way, because what happens is he's in there, he's stuck in there, and he's screaming, and like a cyclist passes by, and he's like this black guy with dreadlocks, and he stops and he lights up this joint, and he's just smoking, and he sees the cop car, and the police is like, help me, blah blah, the keys are over there, and like pointing through like the bullet holes how to help him. And then like the guy gets off his bike and he goes over there and he takes a big puff of the joint and he blows the air into the bullet hole and then he just bounces. And I was like, that's kind of like solidarity to me, you know? I don't know. So but like honestly, not a related scene whatsoever, but I thought it was great, and it was like kind of symbolic that like, you know, fuck everybody, everybody says fuck the police, you know what I mean? Like everybody's suffered at the hands of them, and the patriarchy doesn't just hurt women, it hurts like people of color. So, I don't know,
disproportionately.
Yes. So I like that scene a lot. Anyways, next, the next douchebag that they run into is a truck driver who they'd already passed by earlier, and he was like being a douchebag and like making obscene gestures, and of course being what a trucker is. And so they're like, oh, that's that same motherfucker. So they get him to basically like stop and like make him think like, oh, he's gonna get laid or something. But instead they're just like shouting obscenities at him, like, what the fuck is wrong with you? What makes you think that it's okay to do this shit? And they're just like regañándolo like crazy. And then they blow up his truck because the motherfucker refuses to apologize. Fuck this guy, right?
You said that too casually, like, and then the next logical step was to blow up
because his, you know, truck. It's just kind of like escalating, like the fucking like men keep them over, they're gonna keep fucking them over back, you know? Like this entire movie is like
mood,
each plot point is them saying fuck you to men, fuck you to the man, and like not letting the power get taken away, which is I think why the final scenes are so important. And a lot of people were probably confused and they were like, they shouldn't have done that, but it's very much on purpose, because like, okay, so throughout this whole thing, I haven't really mentioned these plot points, but throughout all of this, the police have been tracking them and interviewing people from like JD to Thelma's husband, who's a douchebag, and everyone, right? Like they're tracking what's going on. And the main detective, he understands that they're justified in their actions. He understands that most likely, like, this dude tried to rape Thelma and that's why they killed him. And he, like, he knows that, like, what's going on, basically. And he tries to reason with them and he tries to tell them to come in. But he knows and they know that no matter what, they're going to get charged with some sort of charge and they're going to do jail time. And what is, basically, like, if they at any point had gone back and like turned themselves in, they're gonna fuck each other over, and it's gonna be like, if anybody gets saved, it's not gonna be both of them, and it's not gonna really be saving, and it's gonna be like giving the power back to the man, basically, because like they're supposed to save, they're saving each other, and they're the only ones that they can trust, because like throughout all these events it's been because of the way that they're treated and all this other shit.
No, it's fucking amazing. Like okay, honesty hour. I've never seen Thelma and Louise, but what I have seen is The Simpsons do a parody of Thelma and Louise, and that's how I know what Thelma and Louise is about.
Close enough.
It was pretty good. Yeah, like the cops and the men were fucking stupid. They're idiots. And yeah. Marge went over the cliff. That's how I know what happened in Thelma and Louise.
So at one point, like, they have no, or it looks like they have no choice there. They have made it to the Grand Canyon. And the police are surrounding them, and there's literally no way to go. Like, they have to turn themselves in at this point. But what does that mean for them, right? It means Thelma goes back to the shittiest husband ever. Like, it means Louise probably goes to jail. And if anybody helps them, the only person that can help them is some detective that knows perfectly well that he can't really help them. Like, he's just there for a job. So I don't know. So basically they refuse to give their power away, and they keep going. That's what they like keep saying, like, let's just keep going. And they do, straight into the Grand Canyon. They also kiss, so that's pretty cool. And at the end of the movie, they like purposely freeze frame when the car is like, it's flying off the canyon and it's at its highest point. So they never show it going down. You never see them fall. You know, so like, I don't know, that's on purpose, basically. They kept going. They kissed and then they kept going.
They kept going.
So I just think that it's such an important movie. I think it's so good.
And it's on Amazon Prime?
It's on Amazon Prime for streaming.
I'm watching that shit tonight. Right now. It sounds amazing. Like, we killing dudes. We blowing shit up. It's exactly my kind of movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God. How many cafecitos do you give this? I already know, but...
None. Yeah, I would say none. It's such an interesting movie. It's a great screenplay to read. Because it's kind of like... It's a great storyline. There's a lot embedded in it because it was written by the right person, but it's also simple, like, you know what I mean? Point A, B, C. And so if you're trying to get into like just reading screenplays, this is a good one to start with.
Y'all heard it here first, y'all. Just based off your interview, just based off of like your description of it, like I give it 5 panduces as well. I haven't seen it, but I already stand this movie. Like, yes, let's blow shit up and kill men. I'm into it.
Good movie. It's good shit. It's great good shit.
Yeah. Educational.
All right. So I hope you guys, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode.
It's a throwback episode.
We have some Patreon shout outs to give. But before we do that, before you leave, go follow us on CYC Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. And leave us a rating and a review because we need them. I don't know.
Reviews make a world go round. Mm. I don't know. That was the wackest shit I ever said. I'll never say that again. Just write reviews, y'all. It makes us happy. Like,
yeah.
Your bitches are depressed, okay? So when y'all say some nice shit, it really be like making our days better. So
yeah. Yeah, that. Okay,
that's
cool.
The truth.
Go follow us. My personal is MITEPanda on Twitter and Instagram.
Mine's at Fried Papita on Twitter, and I think I'm Cabrona on Cabrona.
All right, Patreon shoutouts. All right, so first up on Arco Iris level, our latest one is Mireya, who apparently today finished every single one of our episodes within like a month or something, and
Stan.
That's pretty wild. I'm pretty sure you know my entire life right now. And also Alejandra, thanks for sticking around for another month and supporting. Like, your contributions really help, and they will exceptionally help next month.
Yes. Okay. gonna shout out Aaron. He actually has a Twitch,
which we can also link on cabronasychingonas.com.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So I want to shout out Aaron. He has a Twitch. And it's under Mavs, M-A-V-S, Nez, N-E-Z, Seg, S-E-G. He's doing some cool shit, you guys. I think you should definitely watch. He's really good at games, unlike me. and it's super fun to watch because it's like, I could literally just watch him play video games all day. It's lit. You guys should watch him on Twitch. He's amazing, and I love him. Shout out Aaron. Shout out Denzel, who literally just came back. Another ally. Well, not really. Anyways, I'll get into that later. Love you, Denzel. And Glow, hey, baby, love you. You're in the other room. You probably hear this. Hi.
Next is Cafecito Gang, which is Elena. Like, another month. Thanks for sticking around. I hope that you hear this. I don't know. You stay busy, so thank you for another month. And also another month, one of our long-standing OGs, Noelle. I believe also does some Twitch stuff and is pretty soon starting up a new podcast that I think is going to be really, really interesting, and I'm excited to throw my hat in the ring as a guest.
Oh yeah, I'm so hyped for it. I can't wait. Anything she does, I'm excited for it.
Michelle, you're also on Cafecito Gang. Thanks for another month. You're the dopest. Feel free to reach out at some point. I don't think we ever talked. Alicia from Australia.
Hey.
Around for another month. Literally can't wait to hear from you at some point. And Kristen, one of our newer ones as well. I hope that you guys are all enjoying the Patreon episodes that we've been putting out. We're always here for feedback if you want us to do anything special.
We appreciate y'all. Want to shout out Chrissy. If you guys ever want to buy like pins that say like Gay Thea or Gay Aunt, I think it's Gay Thea. She has like her own Etsy shop. We'll link to that. She has really, really cute, adorable pins. So she's all about it.
She has a bunch of one day at a time stuff.
Oh my God. Her Thea bitchy pins are everything.
And Winona Earp.
And her Winona Earp shit. Stan it. It's all handmade. She makes this shit. It's beautiful. You guys need to go spend your money on some queer folks. Love it. Raciel, I love you. We played, we had game night the other night. Be jealous, Maite. I get to see Raciel. But he does say hi. Jake! If you guys don't already, you should listen to Juice with Jake and Jake. They're on Spotify. They're on iTunes. They're on everything. I love them. He's a Scorpio king. Love you. Vicky, what's poppin', girl? That's the homie. I saw you. I saw you out here with your tickets to that game. Okay, girl, we see you going to the Mexico-USA game. Shout out Rosaura. I think she's a filmmaker. You guys should check out her Instagram. We'll probably link to that as well. She's fucking amazing. Her, like, outfits every day are a new look. Shout out to my brother Veto, the ally, the one who told me about this movie. Our brother Veto. He's the one that told me about this movie, so shout out to you, Veto. Shout out to Marimar. I see you, Queen. We're going to play. We play Wizards online together. So I stan you. Wizards unite forever. And a shout out to the newest Concha Gang member. What up, Heather? What's popping, girl? Thanks for joining. Well, you know what? I shouldn't say girl. My bad. Gender, you know.
Homie.
We don't do gender on this side. So shout out to you, homie. I appreciate your support. If you have any requests for anything specific, let a bitch know. We'll make sure, because like anybody who's a patron, if you guys have any ideas about reach anything, want to hear us to talk anytime. About anything, we'll do it. We're here for you. Y'all are the few people that can give us an opinion and we'll listen.
Well, that's not true. Anybody can give us an opinion as long as they go and leave us a review on iTunes.
See, there we go. Leave us a review and we'll listen to y'all.
And if you want to become a Patreon supporter and also get an extra episode every single month, every 4 weeks on patreon.com/CYC podcast, then head on over there. And yeah, you can, there's several levels that you can choose from, however much you want to support.
Yeah, give some gay girls some money, because we do this shit ourselves. We produce this ourselves. Maite edits this herself, and it's a lot of motherfucking work, y'all. And we really be out here like having full-time lives and then doing this as well. So give some gay girls some money, you know?
Yo, word, yes. Exactly.
But yeah, exactly. Work. But yeah, so I think that's it for today's episode.
Yeah,
we stan y'all. We love y'all.
Peace.
Continue supporting. If y'all want us to support anything, just let us know. We probably will.
Maybe, yeah. Okay, bye.
Bye.